Welcome to the CEN show, the voice of the world community. I want to talk a little bit about our guests and how our guests, when we have guests and even the people that come and be a part of the panel, our platform is based on the information and not the persons or the personalities. So therefore, when we see people on this platform that don't show their face, we make it real comfortable for them because they may not want to be facially revealed. So we focus on the content of the show and not the faces and the real identity. Name identity also. So we make it very comfortable for the guests, and we want people to come on here and share information so we can learn. So this evening, we have a colleague of mine on the show that I'm with almost on a daily basis. But let me introduce the panel myself, and then I'm going to tell you a little bit about our guest this evening. We have Professor Amun-Ra here. He is considered our master teacher on the platform. He has an extensive resume in education and community activism. We got Brother Mashinda, who's a member of ours, that's also one of our master teachers that's been around since we first started. I grew up with him. He's another mentor of mine, like Professor Amun-Ra, and he's residing in Louisiana. We have one of our old members that came on this evening, Sister Aziza, and she hasn't been around in a while, but I'm glad to see that she's here. It is good to see you, Sister Aziza. How are you?
Sister Rosalind.
I'm well. Good evening. How are you? And how is everybody?
Good, and I think everybody else is doing well. So let me tell you a little bit about our guest this evening. I met our guest maybe about 5 years ago. I'm not sure how long he's been at the school now, but he's been around for a while now. And if you met him, he's a very likable person, very friendly, and we always talk about sports. He's a sports buff, and we talk about sports. We have a good time. He's one of the nicest teachers you ever want to meet. You know, real good individual, in my opinion. And I'm glad to have him here. And I didn't introduce myself. I'm Roski Mascani. I'm the host of the show. And sometimes we have Professor Ra hosting the show. So he's the co-host sometimes. So I'm going to go ahead and let our guest, Wild Bill, he picked this nickname that his father had, so I guess it's dear to his heart. But I'm gonna let our guest this evening welcome Wild Bill. I just want you to tell us a little bit about yourself before we start asking you a few questions. So welcome to the show and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Rasiki. Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm really looking forward to it. That was the best introduction I've ever heard in my life. That was great. You made my week. And
Excellent.
it's very nice to meet Professor Ra, Sister Aziza, and Brother Mashinda. Thank you for having me. I'm going by Wild Bill, but I'm originally from Philadelphia. I've been out here 23 years now, out here in California, and I've been staying busy lately. I have a 2-year-old daughter, so she's keeping us on our toes. But I'm just thrilled to be here, and excited for the show.
Okay, well, good. Well, I'm gonna go ahead and get started so we can get into it. So we both teach, and I want to know about your teaching career. how long you've been teaching, where subjects, and then also I want to know why did you choose the profession of education as a teacher?
Okay. Well, excuse me. Originally, like I said, originally from the East Coast, from Philadelphia, and when I was in college, I was originally a business and philosophy major, and I had the opportunity to volunteer for Junior Achievement, which is if you may not be familiar with the organization, they teach business principles to elementary school students. Actually, pardon me, elementary school students through 12th grade. And you didn't have to have an education background at all or anything, and it was an opportunity to volunteer, and I volunteered, and I really got a kick out of being in front of the class and teaching when I fifth graders 1 year and third graders the other, and I really enjoyed it. So I decided instead of excuse me, going out into the workforce, I thought right after school, I said, hey, do you know what? I think I may have found my calling. So I went right to school to get my credential, and then that launched my teaching career. I was fortunate to get a lot of different experiences in my teaching career. I student taught in Philadelphia and in age groups, I should say. First half of student teaching, I taught in Philadelphia and a first grade class, and then the second half of student teaching, I taught in Glasgow, Scotland, and that was 3 months or so, which was a primary seven class. So it was really a great experience to get the two spectrums of the elementary school of the elementary school grade levels and get that experience under my belt. So, or do you want, I could continue. I'll give you the whole story, or so the next
Well,
after grad.
I want to ask a question real quick. You said in Scotland?
There was an opportunity. It was pretty wild because my one of my professors, I was gearing up for the is my last year, and she said there was an opportunity. She had a connection at University of Glasgow, and she said for about the cost of like taking one more class, I could go over there, and including room and board, it was like a partial scholarship, and go over there and teach. And I'm like, sign me up. So I was able to do the second half there, but so that was really nice. And so I get observed by a head teacher there, as well as she made a trip over to do the observations, I guess have a vacation too. But so yeah, it was a really good experience, and that experience it was interesting to see the dynamic between teaching in an urban school in the United States and an urban school in Glasgow, and the major difference I saw was the amount of respect. I mean, the students gave they and support. The principal, the administrator, the headmaster of the school was there to support. And also in my instance, it seemed that the students, the administration, the families, and such were really respected teachers. And unfortunately, that hasn't been the case throughout my career. But that was interesting to see. And so after teaching over there, I had the opportunity to teach in Hawaii. I one a friend of a friend. Long story short, I had the opportunity and said, hey, do you know what? While I'm young, I'll go check it out. And I taught 2 years on the leeward coast of Oahu, which is the west coast of Oahu. And the area where I taught was on a Hawaiian homestead, which is very similar to a Native American reservation, regarding not only the poverty, but also the Native Hawaiians were pushed out to that area, much like the Native Americans were pushed out to the reservations in the continental United States. And it had many of the same problems as Native American reservations as far as drug and alcohol abuse. And the big, between with the parents, guardians, the community on that side at that time in the early 2000s, 2001, 2002, crystal methamphetamine was really big, and unfortunately, a lot of community members were hooked on it, and it was a real problem, and it still is. So, teaching out in Hawaii, it was eye-opening. A lot of people think that it's paradise. It is. It's beautiful over there, but the education system in my particular area where I taught was pretty difficult. It kind of it, it's your first it, it's there's a high turnover rate in that area because there's very little support, and also in that area Haoles aren't Haole is the Hawaiian term for basically outsider, but it could be taken in different ways. Not all, but a lot of the Native Hawaiians didn't really like Haoles too much. And it was a good experience to see that, to be able to put yourself in other people's shoes, where someone may feel if they're put in a situation where they're out, they may be under the microscope. And I thought it was a very eye-opening experience, and I thought it was it gave me more empathy to how other people feel in certain possible how possibly how other people feel in certain situations. And it's like it was to the point. So just a quick story. I mean, it was to the point, like at some in that area, I remember going to get a pizza and grabbing a pizza at a place to take home, and people throwing bottles at me saying, go home, Hallie. So yeah, it was interesting.
And that now that was in Hawaii.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was on the leeward coast in Waianae. On Oahu, about 45 minutes from Honolulu. When people think of Hawaii, they think usually the North Shore or Honolulu and such. This was on the Hawaiian homestead on the west side. Then after that, I was able to get into I after teaching there, I looked into, I was always interested in writing and comedy, and I talked to my brother who lived out in LA, lived out here, and I got into a program, Second City, which is a sketch comedy troupe, and they had a learning center here as well. So I got into Second City and did improv comedy and sketch writing and performing sketch comedy and doing some stand-up as well, while I was teaching. And so my first job was teaching at a parochial school in LA, and then I got into the current school district that I'm in.
Okay, so you never told me about the comedy. I
Oh
didn't
yeah.
know that. Yeah, I wonder if, did Mr. Pratt know that you did comedy?
Mr. Pratt?
Yeah, you remember Mr. Pratt because he's a comedian.
No, I don't think I know Mr. Pratt.
Oh, I thought you knew him. He was at our
Wow.
school for a little while. He was doing long-term subbing there.
Oh, okay. Oh, I didn't know
Yeah.
Mr. Pratt did comedy. Okay, now I remember. He was like the first year I was there. Okay. Okay, now I remember him. Oh, I didn't know he did. Oh, that's wild.
I didn't know you did it. That's something new I learned about you. Sketch comedy too. I know that was something else.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. It's
You
like
have to share some of your clips with me if you have any.
okay. I'll look them up in the vault.
Okay, yeah, do that. So you didn't tell us what you teach here or teach currently.
Oh, right. I'm currently teaching art. I'm a visual arts teacher, but the interesting thing is I didn't go to art school. I'm not formally trained. I stopped taking art in sixth grade because a teacher, I did the best I could in the class, and I thought I was doing really well, and I got a D in the class, and it totally discouraged me to the subject. I said, "Forget this. I hate art. It sucks." And I just turned totally blew off art until I was an adult, and actually got into art because as a stress reliever, because I was getting into other stuff, and as a stress reliever from teaching, I was pretty overwhelmed as a young teacher, and I didn't know what the heck was going on. And
I can imagine.
oh yeah, I didn't know what was going on. So I got books out from the library and taught myself. This is before YouTube. Taught myself how to draw and paint, and I'm still not very good at drawing, but it's okay. It's a work in progress, and it's so since I had an elementary school, a credential K through six, what I found out is if you take one class at the graduate level and sit for the CSET, you're able to get a single subject credential. So I said, you know what? I'm burned out. I was at the time in our district, I was teaching middle school, and I was really stressed out, a lot of health issues, ulcers, migraines, all sorts of stuff. And I was really looking to get out of the profession. I was looking at the LA Fire Department. I was looking at being a engineer, a train engineer for Amtrak. I was looking at all sorts of things because I was done. I was burned out. But fortunately, I came to fruition. I was able to take the class, and I don't know how, but I was good enough to pass the written part of it, and not the written. I'd study my butt off, but the drawing part of it, and it was kind of learning on the job. But I love it. I love teaching. It's kind of like a when all the I love teaching art, I should say. It's a blast when all the students are engaged and they're engaged in a project or engaged in something that they're interested in, and everything's firing all cylinders. It's like an adrenaline rush. It's pretty wild to it's pretty wild to see. I really enjoy it because the kids are, some of them may not have had the opportunity to take art or have art before. And believe me, I know when I taught in elementary school, the in our in our district, they'd have 3 hours of like English language arts and 2 hours of math and whatever else you could fit in the last half 45 minutes of class of school. And it really put our kids, our students at a disadvantage. And it that's a whole other topic, but it's pretty wild. These, when students come up, and they're having difficulty with geography or economics or things of that nature, and I see some high school teachers complain. It's like, hey, it's not their fault. They push that on the back burner. It's not their fault that they don't know geography. They don't know these things. The administrators and the powers that be, made it a priority to do 3 hour blocks of these subjects that we're testing in, and it was all about the testing. So I'm glad. I'm very fortunate and very happy to be in the position that I'm in. Because it's kind of like an adrenaline rush every day when not every day when everyone's firing on all cylinders. It's like being at a being ringside at a title fight. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, and I forgot to mention, every time I visit your classroom, you have great command and the students are engaged, and I can't say that about every teacher, So that's really a plus for our school to have teachers that's able to get their t kids engaged and everything is doing what it's supposed to do. So
Thank you. I appreciate it, but I can't really take credit for that because, like 99.999% of the students that are there want to be there. I think if I was teaching a core subject, I think I'd have some issues. I think I'm really fortunate that the most of the students want to be there. So, but I appreciate it. But
Well, lucky you.
yeah.
Okay. Lucky you. All right. So let's go to the next question. Only have four. In your opinion, what is the state of education in the United States?
Well, it needs a lot of improvement. I think we're making strides in certain areas, but there is a great deal of improvement that's needed. Like I mentioned before, I think testing is just, at this point, this may not be nationwide, but from what I've experienced, it seems like it's more testing than teaching and having the students learn. So not have time to learn. Sometimes the tests that they, that they want to administer is just to check a box, it seems. The students may not have even learned the material yet. It's like, what's the point? You guys are wasting valuable time. So testing, I have a gripe with that. I've had issues with that. But another thing that I think that would benefit our students would be, it seems that a lot of programs for students that are graduating high school, not everyone is may want to go to community college or college university or the military. They may not be their cup of tea. And a lot of, unfortunately, a lot of schools have taken a lot of the trades like wood shop, metal shop, auto body, pre-electrical, and that type of thing to get student welding, to get their feet wet. They've taken them out of the schools. And I think that the trades, I mean, there's excellent professions out there that, and a lot of our students are hands-on. I think they would thrive in, finding a purpose in a job that they really enjoy. And I tell my students that each and every one of them has a gift. They just may not know what it is yet, and they may not have the opportunity to discover it yet. And your gift may be working with hands. It may be welding. It may be electrical work. Maybe cosmetology. Maybe culinary arts, being a baker or a chef. But I told them their number one job is to find out what their gift or gifts are, if they're fortunate to have more than one. But hopefully they could parlay that their gifts that they have into a career that they truly enjoy. Because believe me, I've been there. It's nothing worse than getting up and dreading going to work. And I've been there through a few different jobs growing up, from being a mover to a stonemason's laborer. It's just means to an end to be able to go to school, but it had to be done. But I want them to be successful and find something that they truly enjoy and find a career in that. And I think the trades are not emphasized enough. I think those opportunities should be presented, and ideally there would be a an opportunity to have like a comprehensive trade school within the district, or a feeder school to go to a trade school within a certain area. And it's a I don't know if it's a well it's a I've proposed several things to the different school districts that I've taught in, and unfortunately in some it's fallen on deaf ears. But I've proposed, when I taught in Hawaii, because of the over 50% dropout rate and on a high unemployment rate and the crystal meth, the methamphetamine epidemic that was over there, I put together a proposal my second year. No, my I'm sorry, pardon me, my first year of teaching, to when I wrote to state representatives and legislators, and regarding, I put together a comprehensive plan, just ideas for a possible trade school. And the good news is, it wasn't necessarily a trade school, but they did, one of the representatives did set up a maritime academy at Waianae High School, which I'd like to think I had some influence on, to provide opportunities for the students to become merchant marines. Because in that area, the only jobs when I taught there were basically the tourist industry, which you had to drive an hour, well, sometimes more than an hour, to get to Honolulu, which to get to the the tourist jobs or the military. And they made there's quite a few military bases over there, but there weren't too many job opportunities in that area. So I had the similar proposal that I gave to the higher ups, and basically when I did that, they said stay in your lane, and that's not your pay grade basically. So it was discouraging, but I think that a trade school is would be something that at the local level that would really help our students thrive.
I kind of agree with you on the testing. There's a big focus on testing. And then you have these tests where the students are not equipped to even, touch the surface on them. That's why you have a high rate of far below basic scores, because the students are not being taught about those type of, well, they're being taught, but they're not able to master those subjects and those that and the information that's being offered on those tests. I know I compare what's going on now to when we were in school. When we were in school, you didn't have the curriculum offering of the classes at a high level where the students are not even qualified to be in those type of classes. If you take math, for instance, most of the students are having met the basic skills of mathematics, but here they offer, with the No Child Left Behind, they offer the Math 1 classes only, Integrated Math 1, which is equivalent to Algebra 1. And the most, I would say 75% of the students are should be in basic math, and there should only be limited amount of higher courses in mathematics. So the tests are geared to a higher, the higher curriculum courses. Well, they say eighth grade, but a lot of the students is not even able to do master the eighth grade standards. So it's a big mess when it comes to testing. And then when you talk about the ROP classes, we talk about that quite often here on this platform, where yes, students should get ROP classes and have those options, because everybody don't want to study and learn all of these subjects that are required to be taught, but that's how it is. So, okay, what I'm gonna do, I have two more questions. I'm gonna go around the panel because we have a few people here. And so I'm gonna start with Sister Aziza, because she haven't been around in a while. Sister Aziza, did you have a comment or question so far for Wild Bill?
Well, I was gonna say it just was interesting to hear his different experiences in teaching and traveling and how they're not different and he can see it. And it's weird because it kind of brought me back to my childhood or whatever. I'm not in that, an education field, of course, but I know when I was in high school, it was a problem of with me trying to take some type of classes, like he mentioned, like trades or whatever. For one, it was like my birthday was an issue as well, but it was limited. When I meet people on my job that travel as well in the past or whatever, they tell me how, oh, well, I took welding in high school or I took this particular trade in high school, and I'm like, well, it was never offered to me out here. We just don't have it. So it just was, it's weird that, some things is just, far and beyond, and maybe it'll never change. And hopefully that does. No, I just want to say that. That's it.
You're on mute, Rasha Key.
Okay, we got, thanks, Professor. We got
Okay.
Sister Kathy is here. How you doing, Kathy?
I'm well. Hello, everyone. Took me a minute to get on, so I'm just here listening, but it's interesting so far. You know all about education, because even though my kids are grown, I still got grandkids that's coming through that system, and I want to be up on what's going on with them, you know?
Yeah. Any questions for our guests?
No, not so far. I'm just still tuned in. I'm listening.
Okay, we'll come back.
Okay.
All right, we got sister making it happen.
Greetings, everyone.
I think you know our guest, sister, make it happen, but
I think so. I
yeah,
think so.
we're incognito this evening.
The voice kind of sounded familiar, but I got in a little late as well, so I didn't hear everything. But it was interesting to hear somewhat of the journey from Hawaii and then just some of the different career paths that were taken. And if this is who I think it is, what an amazing opportunity for the students who are getting a chance to sit and be exposed to such a well-rounded individual who has many paths in life to share. So as an educator, I just feel that the district has shifted priorities. Based on, I guess, what appears to be a shift in the technology and a shift in the job market, whatever that means. But foundational things are foundational things. You still need someone to fix the computers. You still need someone who, when you plug that stuff into the get electricity. There's some basic things you need, that are well paid, that makes for a well-rounded society. Everybody can't be a UC bound student. Some people get there differently. Some people prepare and that's their dream for all their life. Some people end up just falling in there because of their path. So students, are fortunate to have a teacher or someone who has life experience and has reinvented themselves over and over again because that's the world we're in, where you have to reinvent yourself, transfer your skills, and find happiness in what you do so that you can have a great social emotional balance. So that's what I wanted to contribute.
Okay, so wow, Bill, that was one of our counselors
Oh,
that moved on to another school. So you
yeah. Oh,
probably know who that is.
yes, familiar voice. It's
Okay.
nice to hear your voice. And
All right.
I just
So
have
let's
one more thing. I'm sorry.
go ahead. Go ahead.
Sorry, just one more thing. I just thought of when I was listening to the panel. Being an art teacher, I think I've told my students this several times. If I walk into the store, if I bump into them at the grocery store 5 years down the road, am I really going to care if they know how to draw a perfect sphere and add value and shading? Of course, if they're going to be an art major, yeah, okay, that's fine. But what I really want them to get out of my class is to be able to think outside the box and to be free thinkers and not be robots, and be problem solvers. That's what we need. We need problem solvers in our society, and utilizing their creativity to solve problems, that'd be fantastic. So I encourage them to, not that overall, but also I want them to be exposed to different mediums and such, and maybe find a creative outlet that they can have for the rest of their life. But overall, I want them to unlock their creativity and apply that to their life, to their job, to whatever they think. But I want them to expand their horizons as far as that goes, and not be afraid to fail. That's what artists do. That's one of the pillars of being an artist, is failing and learning from your mistakes and trying new things. And that's what I encourage them to do.
Well, I think that's a basic thing in education. And anytime a person is learning, if you don't have, I mean, if you learn in the information and you just learn it, you haven't mastered it yet. So it takes failure to learn, because you're not going to pick it up right away all the time. And you may have some brilliant kids that can pick up things real fast, but like myself, I know it's not a lot of them that start off just knowing things. So it's going to take failure. You learn from failure, and it's not something to be ashamed of. It's just it's it makes sense, and when it makes sense, there's nothing to be ashamed of. And I think that's a flaw of the educational institution, where kids are so afraid to be wrong. It's okay to be wrong, because that's where you get the most learning from, the experience of not getting it right the first time. So I'm gonna go to Brother Joe. Brother Joe, you there? There you are.
Yeah, I tune in late. I don't know what the subject was. I'm gathering some what folks are inferring. Is this about art,
Well,
or
we
is it?
have Wild Bill is an art teacher at our school, and he just was sharing his teaching experience with us.
Gotcha. Hey,
And
Brother Bill, have you checked out the mural on the 40s row?
Oh, the mural in the 40s? Yes.
Well, I'm the one that designed that.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah. But anyway, as far as art goes, a kid got I don't know where the conversation's been going. But anyway, in my years of experience, kids that end up being artists, man, they just have it. I remember when I was teaching at your school site, and this kid drew me while I did my lecture and handed me the picture when I finished. And he was an unusual kid. He's a boxer now. I saw him at the gym. But most kids I find that gravitate to art and any of those subjects that's in the ROP realm, they seem to have a knack for it. That's why kids need exposure to as many things as possible and find out, what their niche is. You never know what it's going to be. And so the more stuff you offer, but as far as industrial arts, they threw those things away 35 years ago in the Compton district. But we still gonna need plumbers, cement people, contractors, electricians, stuff like that. But these folks that's running the show, I don't know what kind of Kool-Aid they drinking, but they must think they're in another neighborhood, as far as I'm concerned. And the choices they make at school sites is never for the kids. It's always for them, some shape, form, or color, just how they want to be perceived. It's like coaching sports, which I did that too for 20 years, just about. And a coach can have stuff in his mind about what he wants to do. And Brother Ra, you can probably attest to this, and you too, Rashiki, but if you ain't got the kind of groceries, so to speak, to cook the meal that you want with your team, you are out thinking yourself. You got a KISS, which is keep it simple, stupid. And like an old coach told me one time, that Joe, you can't make chicken salad out of chicken shit. Excuse my language. But I find that in Compton, I found it a lot. And the kids, they need a bombardment of basics, because that's what their problem is. That's why they experience the failure, many of them. They do not have the basic skills of the arts. You know what I'm saying? And I remember Brother Freeman at Willowbrook. If a kid wasn't up to snuff in one of them categories, he took two courses until they got straight on that. And I know they just a lot of social promotion and whatnot, but until the kids get straight, you know, why are you going to keep moving him up the chain and you know he's inadequate in all these different areas? But I don't want to keep running my mouth, but just given my, you know, stuff I experienced while working in the system and at that particular school you're at. Reading is the key. And until they solve that, they just putting a Band-Aid on the AK-47 wound, in my opinion. But thanks for the letting me make a comment, brother. All right, peace.
All right, thanks. Okay, Brother Masinda.
Wow, Bill.
Yes.
How you doing tonight?
Fantastic. And yourself?
Man, I'm doing excellent, man. I appreciate your presentation tonight. Thanks for coming. I'm a regular, and I really appreciate what you've talked about up until this point. To a little bit about my background, I worked at the oldest vocational school in Louisiana. So it was the first one in Louisiana. It's now a technical community college. So we're offering transfer, you know, like university pathways, things like that. But we haven't given up on the trades. We were talking about the trades. I'm not going to get long-winded because I can talk about this probably for the next probably 2 hours. This morning, I was at a signing day at a private Christian school, predominantly white. I have a little nephew that actually goes to that school. It's a pretty good school, academic, you know. So if you want to learn how to read and write, do arithmetic, and get into a university and things like that, because some of our local public schools are struggling. I don't want to get off into that. My glass is half full, not half empty, so I don't want to be negative. But some people do put their kids in private schools for their personal reasons. And but at the end of the day, I'm saying, again, I was at a signing day at a private Christian school, which traditionally they're going to your flagship schools like Louisiana State University, Mississippi College, Louisiana Tech. I think you get my drift. Well, today at signing day, I had more commitments than LSU, Southeastern Louisiana University, the Navy, a couple other local community colleges, Northwestern State Louisiana College or University. So there's been a shift. So you traditionally, parents are paying thousands of dollars for their kids to go to private school. They want them to go to the university. Well, like Brother Joe talks about drinking the Kool-Aid, you know, I think there's a transformation going on where I don't know if they're not drinking the Kool-Aid anymore, and I don't know who's driving what in their families, but the kids are making the decision. We have a different generation. And like I say, I can elaborate on that for another hour. But what's happening is the kids are just letting their parents know, hey, this is what I want to do. So the ones that run off to LSU, to USC, UCLA, wherever, they major in whatever they major in. Now, I'm not knocking those schools. Some people become very successful and do very well. But there are a lot of students who are being forced by their parents into the, you know, trying to fit a square in a circle, you know, or whatever, you know, whatever the cliche or the saying is. They're trying to get, you know, trying to get blood out of a turnip. They're trying to, you know, I'm gonna leave that alone. At the end of the day, so the kids, I've been in the game. I was an information technology professor, assistant professor for 14 years. You touched on teaching them how to think. Yeah, I can show you how to configure a network, how to configure a server, a router, a switch, you know, cabling and all that kind of stuff. But how do you troubleshoot? How do you become, you know, powerful in the industry? So I taught my students how to research and how to research issues and things like that. And so a lot of them became very successful, making maybe two to three times as much as I make now. They stay in contact with me, a lot of them. I said all that to say that these some of them were graduates from universities who decided to, who couldn't find a job or wasn't making enough money. So they went back to the technical side of things, the technical college. So again, we offer university pathways and things like that. But again, they came to the technical side. And, you know, they, like I say, college graduates, some with masters, some of them, not many. And you're finding out the statistics show that over the last 20, 25 years, the people that are coming out of the technical areas are more successful at getting jobs and making more money than these graduates that are coming out of these universities. So we know it's a business model. It's a business dynamic, and we understand that. So, but I always say, I don't care what you do, but do something. And that's my message, you know, and I don't advocate one way or the other. I want them to make their own decisions. So today at that signing day, I was very proud that we had four or five students that are going into, that's going to continue into when they graduate in May, they're going to show up in the fall and continue our electrician program. These are the kids that their parents spent thousands of dollars to go to this school and probably could have sent them to the public school because guess what? There's no ACT or SAT score required to get into these technical programs. They go right into welding. They learn welding and they go 45 credit hours, 18 months or less. And they're welders. Got two serious welding instructors. Came out of industry. We got the HVAC, air, heating, ventilation, air conditioning, refrigeration, night program. Guy works in the daytime at his business, and he teaches at night, teaching whoever wants to learn about air conditioning, heating, and refrigeration, and so forth. You got building technology, better used to be called carpentry. But they call it building technology because they learn carpentry skills. They learn some plumbing skills, some electrical skills. They can put in a toilet. They can put in a shower. They can they do masonry where they can, you know, build a wall with a brick. They can learn how to they learn how to build basic cabinets. They learn how to work power hand tools and power tools. These are life-sustaining skills that had I been taught that, you know, I own a couple of pieces of property. And I'm hiring people all the time, but I'm cutting a few corners because I've learned some things since I've been working there over 20 years. I go down there and I learn to get and pick brains. But anyway, not only is it nothing wrong with learning the trade, man, it's like, man, it's kind of like it's imperative that they understand that that's available. So we didn't create it. We didn't invent it. But there's something called dual enrollment. So these very kids that signed to our school for the fall, these are 12th graders. And that will be that's already a student on our campus. These kids come to school at 12. I set it all up. I was part of the program. I mean, there's other people involved. I'm not taking any credit. I'm just proud that it's happening. That and it's not just at this private Christian school. We'll talk about the public schools as well. They're busing them in. Every one of them, they come Monday through Friday. These are seniors who pretty much got all their credits in and they can afford to leave at 12 o'clock and show up at our school at 12:30. They get out at 2:30 every day. And so they, you know, enough time to get those credit hours. And then you can keep in mind, they're only taking like five credit hours. And so meaning that they one or two classes, you know, for the semester, sometimes just one class, but they're getting college credit. And so they're learning a lot. And so what we're finding out is that a lot of these private schools, that school in particular in this local area, more and more of them are deciding, they're buying into, you know what? There's nothing wrong with sending my kid to the technical track. So in Louisiana, we have the technical pathway. And I don't know, I think I'm from California, but I don't know what the school system is. I've been gone a while. But we have the technical track and we have the academic track. And you can declare that when you're about in the eighth grade or something like that, maybe ninth. I think it's the eighth. But you decide, I think, well, let's say ninth grade. You choose the track with you and your parent, and basically you don't have to worry about all that academic stuff. You know, what I mean by you can bypass all those standards that Russell Key was talking about, all the things that are in the way of a student to become successful. So I give Louisiana that they've given those pathways. They've created two pathways. And again, I'm sure they didn't invent the wheel. It's probably going on somewhere else. But I know here, real time, I'm working in it. And we are getting several students from these local high schools and private schools to come here to learn welding, building technology, electrician, HVAC, and so forth. And they're becoming very successful. And so I just like to give you another shout out and say, you know, hey, it's not only an alternative, but quiet as it's kept, it's not only powerful, but really people, they need to peep game. And because we live in a service economy, we're living in a we're a knowledge economy. It's all about what you know. And I'll tell you what, with the little property that I own, I'm looking for plumbers. It's hard to find an electrician. You know, it's like almost like a dying breed, so whatever. So anyway, we're cultivating. And so for the first, so the dual enrollment program is huge out here. It's very huge. So I mean, the local community college, and we're actually a technical community college now. We're accredited by, you know, the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools, just like out there, the Western Association of Colleges and Schools. We have that regional accreditation, that top accreditation and all that. However, it's the technical side is no longer just a mere, you know, alternative. It's kind of like, hey, we're promoting it, and it's being promoted on levels, you know, like never before. And so I'll give Louisiana that. I'm proud to be a part of that. And so you know, come on down here if you want to get bring some visual arts and, you know, check out what we're doing down here. But thank you for your presentation. I'm done because I know this is only about an hour, 15 minutes. I've been doing it enough, but I just want to say I support, you know, what's been said so far. Thank you, man.
Thank
We
you.
gonna go longer than an hour because I got two more questions to ask him. Okay, Professor Ron.
Yeah. First of all, I just want to say, how you doing, Brother Bill? And hope all is well in your family with you. Appreciating your presentation and what you've been discussing. I just have a few questions. And do you go back to Philadelphia at all?
Yes, I still have family in Philadelphia. So my dad and my sister are out there. So I try to get out there. We try to get out there like twice a year now
Has
that COVID's over.
it changed?
Oh yeah, it has. It down Philly itself has changed a great deal. Like the skyline has changed, but just yeah, it's been so long since I've lived there, so it'd only be like maybe 5, 6 days at tops that I'd be out there. But yeah, it's a great change coming back there, you know, seeing what's going on, good things and bad things.
So what is your academic background as far as education?
My undergrad, I was in health administration and philosophy, but I went back to school to get my master's in elementary ed, and then I about 5 years ago I got my
What schools did you go to?
at University of Scranton and the crown jewel of northeastern Pennsylvania and Widener University in Chester, and then yeah, that's it, and then just online to get my credential for my art credential.
Okay. So yeah, and so when you say that you try to get the kids to think outside the box, what is an example of thinking outside the box?
Oh well, for instance, like a project that we're working on right now, we went over a one-point perspective, and I first tell the students that this is something that I just learned myself. I didn't even learn this in school. I learned it a few years prior, but we did like a, I try to relate to them, meaning that it's never too, to get to the point, give them the point that it's never too late to stop learning. And I said, you know, this is a really cool technique. And basically what we have with this project we're recently working on is, it's called a bird's eye view. So basically I teach them how to do the basic drawing of a city, skyscrapers, that sort of thing from an overhead view. And they're right now they're in the process of designing their own city. We go back and kind of look at urban planning and look at, you know, you need an industrial zone, you need a residential zone, you need a commercial zone, or have them integrated in some way. But basically they're if they were given a plot of land, how would they be an urban developer? How would they design the city? How would they set up a you know, set up the libraries, the parks, you know, a healthy city. You can tell a healthy city if they have a lot of parks, you know, if people are in the parks. If people aren't in the parks, not a very healthy city. You know, they just kind of go through a background of urban planning and city and such, but then I give them the leeway, not leeway, but hey, it's an open canvas. It's up to you how you want to design the city. And then after they design the city, they have a writing piece that explain their city and explain where the zones are, what's going on in the city and such.
So your class is an elective?
Yes. Well, yeah, it's an elective. They have to choose two years of electives while they're in high school to graduate. But yeah, I'm one of the elective teachers.
Okay. So what's your enrollment?
I have about 180 students or so for six periods.
You have 180 students?
Yeah, total, like for the day.
Yeah, but so how many in each class?
How
many classes are you teaching today?
Six. Oh, well, it's a block schedule, but throughout the week, I see the kids. So my biggest class, I think, is 38. That average is like 35, 38, around there.
All right, now, and so in your course outline, you have outcomes. What are some of those? When you're teaching 38 people, do you have teacher's aid?
No, I don't.
So you teach your kids by yourself?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Second, what do you see is your biggest challenge in understanding today's students and compared to, let's say, students 5, 6 years ago?
Well, my biggest challenge currently is technology, technology is a blessing and a curse. I mean, it's great as far as a resource, but also with, you know, having these computers, basically these, you know, supercomputers in our hand now, in our telephones, you know, I'm pretty strict about the phone policy in my class. But as I've learned, I'm using it to my advantage. Now I'm letting the students, once we go over the lesson, I let the students, if it helps them in their creativity or get them in the groove, they could listen to music as long as they have earphones in, as long as I'm done talking and we're done the lesson, I don't have a problem with that. And sometimes we look up resources as well. So it's a blessing in that sense. Some other challenges I think that I've noticed is just students, it's unfortunate. I have to have this talk several times with the students, but you know, they don't know how lucky they are to be able to have a free education. And we talk about this, you know, a few times a year to kind of, they may not know, you know, there's kids in other parts of the world that would do anything to be in there, to have that opportunity to be in their seats. I have a friend from Burkina Faso in West Africa. She says young men would be, boys would be, you know, taken into by warlords into death squads, students, young people working in mines in other parts of the world, working in factories, no child labor laws, sex workers working in, working in fields in Mexico. I had a student's dad who was a bare knuckle boxer when he was a kid in San Salvador and El Salvador. There's so many, there's opportunities here. And what really gets me riled up is when students don't take their education seriously, because it's very sad. There's kids that would do anything, young people that do anything to be able to have that opportunity. And it's I have in-laws that in Jamaica that they live in basically a place that's a little bit bigger than like a garden shed with six people, with no plumbing, no running water, and they have to pay to go to school. Those, my nieces would do anything to be able to go to school and, have a free education. So that's a challenge, just getting some students to take their education seriously.
When you have 38 students, or just say 25, what type of project? I mean, you have different levels of art appreciation, fine arts, theater arts, and different aspects. How do you deal with students' distractions and students bring a lot of their personal challenges to their class. Some just go to sleep, some just read. Then some are just upbeat. Nothing bothers them. But when you're dealing with outcomes and course outlines, what is your grading system as far as the students? Because do you introduce them to art terms and they have to define them, and do you are they just going there and start drawing, or you just teach them the aspects of creative arts or things of this nature? But what I'm trying to say is you as an art teacher, there's different aspects of art that you have to cover in order to say, this is my class and you're going to learn this. Boom, boom, boom. That's the way some teachers, but with the distraction of hip hop and the distraction of overcrowding in classes and things, teachers sometimes do the best they can. But what are the goals of the class, and what do you do to attract students to say, hey, I'll take that as an elective?
Okay. Well, I try to, first off, as far as the different distractions and the different, life experiences and possible issues that students may be going through, I like to try to put myself in other people's shoes and kind of think how would I feel if I was in their position, and try to think of things that way. One of my high school teachers taught me that, and I think it's very useful, and it's heightened my empathy, and that's what I try to do. I like to think of, there's a, what's the quote? There's a philosopher, Philo of Alexandria. He said, this is a quote that I love: be kind for everyone you treat is fighting a great battle. And he, I put that in perspective with these students. You don't know what is going on at home. You don't know what's going on with their family members, or if they even have a family. A lot of students, unfortunately, are bouncing around different group homes or foster care and things of that nature. And, I can't even imagine, that's a whole other topic. But interestingly enough, I was talking to a student that he said he's been in over 35 foster cares or foster parents, or a combination of foster parents and group homes. So this is stuff that I didn't experience in my life. And I can imagine how difficult these circumstances that these young people are going through. As far as the course is concerned, I try to introduce the seven elements of art and the principles of design, and I tell them that that we're going to study each of these elements of art, and then we're going to base the projects off of these. So, value, shape, color, and so on. And we're going to base the projects off of that. And basically, it's difficult because with the drawing and painting, I don't have enough days in the year. I wish I had more, but I'm trying to expose them to not only art history, like you mentioned, but also the different mediums and different things you could utilize to be creative. Like I said, I'm horrible at drawing. I use my students' drawing as as examples. I'm more of an abstract painter and a sculptor. So when we get to that, that's more my wheelhouse. That's what I show. But I don't have a problem with if there's a student that's kicking butt and is one heck of a drawing, or there's really good at drawing, or really good at when we start doing watercolor, I ask them, I pull them aside, I say, hey, do you know what? Do you mind if you could give a short mini lesson, if you feel comfortable next week and show how you did that? I think that's really cool for the students to be able to, if they're comfortable, share their talents and share their successes. I try to bring in my work and show them that, but also I bring in, some things that could go horribly wrong. And I said, hey, it's okay. Look at this drawing, it's horrible, but it's something I'm working on. And that's what each and every one of us can do. There's always room for improvement. So ultimately in my class, in this first level class, I want them to get a taste of art history, get a taste of different mediums, and find their creative niche. And I tell them that, we may not have the certain resources as far as kilns and things of that nature to work on pottery or jewelry making and things of that nature, but there's so many creative aspects out there, and so many creative opportunities out there. And we talk about college and career paths and so many different creative avenues between, acting, filmmaking, landscape design, welding, there's metal arts. I mean, there's I just don't have enough time in the year. And so I get pretty excited about it, but I want the students to be turned on by, I hope to turn a light switch on to their creativity, and hopefully having if art isn't their cup of tea, hopefully at least have an appreciation for art when they leave my class. And if they're interested, they could take the other upper level classes. But that's how I try to sell the program. If they're interested in that, we go from there. And as far as grading, I tell them, hey, I've been doing this long enough to know and I know if you did the best you could. I know who's dogging it and just, not trying. I don't base it on if I like the artwork. I set up a rubric and show them what I'm looking for. And as long as they're doing the best they can and they're turning in all their work, there's no reason why they shouldn't get an A. But if they're clowning around or not giving it their all, then, I'm sorry. And I tell them, the ones that, are distracting or being disruptive to other students, hey, you know what? You don't have to be here. Fortunately, I mean, this is an elective. You're not going to hurt my feelings, but maybe something else maybe you're more interested in. And the counselors at our school are very accommodating, very supportive in that, because the classes are packed to the gills.
Okay, well, thanks for your presentation. I'm a graduate of Centennial. But when we was there, it was it's a lot different as far as the area. Well, and when I say that, I mean the students. Most of them had two parents. Most of them, we had a large class. We had about at least 10 to 12 different clubs. Art class, art club, Spanish club, different clubs that people belong to based on their interests and stuff. and it was just a different. It wasn't about tests. All right, Rasha P.
Yeah. Well, Bill, if you enter the office and look to the wall to the left from Shorty, you know, yes. The opposite wall from Shorty, you'll see Professor Ron Plack up there.
Oh, so, yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, so he's featured in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, very cool. I'm looking forward to seeing it tomorrow.
Okay, good. All right, so I got two more questions, and I want to really get your take on this. So I'm going to ask them. So and then if anybody else have a question or comment after these two questions, we'll go to them. Do you still have time, Wild Bill?
Oh, yeah, sure, certainly.
Okay. So the next question is, do you have any global concerns? If yes, what are they, and what are some potential solutions for these concerns?
Yeah, plenty of global concerns. I've quite a few, but number one, I'd say is the situation escalation between the United States and China, and China's aggressiveness, towards Taiwan and as well as the war in Ukraine. I mean, there's a lot of horrible things that are happening. The refugee crises with all the wars and conflicts that are going on, globally, that's a major concern. As far as, and another reason being, we have young people that are in our military, from our schools, young people that are enlisted in the military. And I know, with our alliances with NATO and such, if, China does something where they are emboldened and attack Taiwan, or if they get aggressive in Asia towards Japan or whoever, any of our allies, we're going to be involved. And, we're pretty stretched thin already. The men and women in the military are pretty stretched thin with, just fighting, two wars for over 20 years. So that's a major concern. The climate change, I mean, that's another major concern with, everything going on with the more powerful natural disasters and such. I really don't have a solution for that. I mean, it's just, it's something that's very, very concerning. At a national level, I'd say, domestic poverty, in areas of the United States, in some urban areas in Appalachia and Native American reservations. I mean, there's some areas of the United States that are very impoverished, and it's almost like third world countries. And, we could do better to help the people in those areas as a nation. There's quite a few things, and it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming at times to turn on the news and see everything like that. But, we hope that, I hope that, we're able to make strides as far as, quelling some of this aggressiveness that's going on with, with China, and also the war, the ongoing war in Ukraine. We just admitted late this past Sunday, no, Monday, I believe, Norway into NATO, and having a strong alliance, I think, is good to, having them join, and possibly Sweden shortly, and more countries, to be able to stop the aggressiveness and basically the bullies of the world that are picking on other countries. I think that's very important to have a strong alliance with other countries and be on the same page to not tolerate, that type of behavior.
Okay, last question. What are your views of the U.S. government and the world government? Are they related or separate?
Well, I think there's a relationship between the two. They're intertwined in a way. They work off each other. There's a ripple effect with, quote unquote superpowers in the world that reverberate to other countries in the world. As far as the United States is concerned, just seeing what happened 2 years ago on January 6th, democracy is very fragile, and it's something that needs to be worked at. And, we have checks and balances for a reason. And, we need to elect people that, are going to, respect the Constitution and basically, do what's in the best interest of the citizens. And unfortunately, that kind of reflected on that day, reflected how serious, how close we came to our democracy crumbling. And so, I mean, there's a lot of room for improvement, and being diligent citizens, and as far as giving back to our community, or running for elected office, or electing people that are going to represent us, that are going to be in our best interests.
Okay, well, I'm gonna go around the panel one more time, and we're gonna take our pause. Okay, Sister Aziza, question or comment? You still there, Sister Aziza? Okay, you may have to leave out for a second. Sister Kathy?
No questions.
No still comment.
No, it's all quite interesting. Actually, I'm liking what I'm hearing. I'm glad there's more things for the young people to do, because regular college is not for everyone. Some people do better with their hands. So I'm glad to see that they have more opportunities to venture out than, what we have.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Brother Joe.
Just want to ask, I guess he never answered the question about what he thought of the mural.
They're on the 40s block. There's quite a few great murals on at Centennial. Now, your particular one on the 40s block, is that that, if I'm not mistaken, is that the one on the wall in front of the field?
Yes. I designed both of them, the one on Central also.
Are you kidding me? Those are awesome.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Wow. And you painted them too?
No. I had a guy. It was a guy that was painting around the school, and we were having a lot of racial tension at the school. And I had those two pyramids on a matter of fact, the former art teacher, Mr. Ellis, I had him paint that on a poster for me that I put on the wall with the Aztec pyramid and the Egyptian pyramid with the black and brown hand coming out embracing. And so the painter guy, I had him put, the same thing on a much larger scale, but to put the heroines on it, like, the old Meg Head, Tahuti, Quexico, and those different figures that are surrounding the pyramid.
It's absolutely, it's amazing. And I love the story, looking at it, I see something new every time.
Right.
They're amazing.
And then the one on Central is Imhotep sitting at a computer.
Oh, right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's like three stories high, two stories high. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's no, it's a, they're it's amazing. It's amazing work. It's
Yeah.
a,
The
I
guy,
love the design.
he was a good painter. I caught a little flack from some of the from the Centennial alumni, especially the one on Central, you know, because of the way the Apache looks. That was the painter guy. Only thing I did was Imhotep, and he did the Indian dress head.
Okay.
He's a real good painter, and it was inexpensive. I think it brought some calmness to the campus. And I never saw any graffiti on any of it over the years when I passed by. So the kids respect it. You know, the first thing they want to do is pull out that spray can on something they don't think much of. And also, I'm going to leave you with this. You know, west of the football stadium, the southwest corner is a plot of grass. And I had my students clear that one time, and they planted vegetables all in that area right there.
The south, so right off the, so outside the fence of the football stadium?
No, inside the fence of the football stadium, but on the southwest side.
Okay.
It was just a bunch of weeds and stuff like that. So we watered it for a couple of weeks, and we had pitchforks. Cleared it all out, and this teacher, Mr. Call, was, you know, like into farming and stuff. So we planted a bunch of vegetables all through there. But I had my students clear it, get all the dead grass out, turn the dirt over, and all of that.
Nice.
Yeah. So, and we definitely got to eat.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Appreciate you, Bill. I'm glad to see you're in that position because I remember the former guy that was in that teaching slot, and he was, boy, he was something else. I just leave it. All right. Thanks, Henry. Okay, Professor Rock.
Appreciate what's been said by the San Craig. No, I have no more questions. I think it was just an excellent presentation. Appreciate what Brother Bill is doing up there at the school as far as trying to keep the students engaged. And as he said, to have a deal with problem solving and thinking outside the box. You know, some teachers just want you to think inside the box. And so that's a good thing. Everything's cool.
All right. All right. Wow, Bill, any parting words?
No, I don't. I just really appreciate the time to talk to everyone, and I really enjoyed sharing my experiences. You know, it made me think of kind of reflect on my teaching as well as I was talking and how I could improve and such. So no, I really had a great time. I really appreciate you inviting me. And that was a blast.
Okay, well, good. I'm glad you came, and it was good hearing about your experiences and your teaching methodology. Really good. Appreciate it. So we're going to take our pause, but before we take our pause, Professor Ra, you want to tell us about who's coming on Monday?
Yeah, I guess it's tentatively Damian Goodman of Crenshaw Subway and organization that deals with Leimert Park and deals with Leimert Park is one of the features of the African American community as far as setting up marketplaces. You've got enormous amount of little villa of African Afrocentric marketplace, and we hope to have him there because they've done some fantastic things with regards to buying property, converting them into apartments, and helping bring low income homes there. So we're going to be talking about those strategies. Yeah.
Okay. Well, good. Good. Yeah. I hope He will be here on Monday. That'll be a good treat for us. So next week, we got good old Brother Muko coming back. Brother Muko's coming on, and he's going to talk about medical warfare and race correction. So that's going to be an interesting one. Yeah, Brother Muko, I haven't been around in a while, so it'd be good to see him back on. All right, everybody, I appreciate it. Appreciate the attendance, the participation. So we're going to take our pause, each one teach one, in Conscious Corner. See everybody next time.
All right, brother.
Good night.
Good night.